For the next few minutes on the morning show, a very special treat, especially for all of those of you who love crossword puzzles. And for public radio listeners who are such a smart, well-read group of people by and large, crossword puzzles, I know for many of you, are a very substantial part of your intellectual diet. And I have in front of me a wonderful book called Stanley Newman's Opus 100 Crosswords. It's a book which celebrates the many crossword puzzles which Stanley Newman has constructed over the years, and many others for that matter. This book contains 99 of his favorite puzzles, plus a brand new one, sort of in celebration of this anniversary. And Stanley Newman is someone who is world-renowned for his ability at solving crossword puzzles and also at constructing them. This book, by the way, is published by Random House Puzzles and Games. And for the next few minutes, I'm delighted by the opportunity of speaking with Stanley Newman about his first love, crossword puzzles. Stanley Newman, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hi, Greg.
The foreword to the book by Will Shortz, who's the crossword editor of the New York Times, talks about how you first burst onto the scene at the age of 28 at the 4th American Crossword Puzzle Tournament. Ahead of that sort of splashy entrance into the fray, tell us about your relationship to crossword puzzles.
Well, before my first appearance at a crossword solving tournament, I really wasn't much more than a recreational solver of crosswords. In the daily newspaper, when I was very, very young, in TV Guide, I really didn't attach all that much importance to it, other than a way to learn some new words and to exercise my brain. It wasn't until I entered my first puzzle tournament that I began to have a deeper appreciation for what most people who do puzzles recreationally take for granted, that puzzle is just going to be there in the daily newspaper, that somehow it appears on the page, maybe by some divine force, maybe there's some gremlins who puts it on there, but it really is a whole process, a very careful, meticulous process by which crosswords end up being published, the creation and the editing and the careful preparation. And I was in the midst of a whole bunch of competitors who were really into crosswords much, much deeper than I could imagine anyone would have been. And a lot of that rubbed off, and that really got me started in a small way toward the puzzle career that I eventually ended up in.
Very good. Tell us for a second how these crossword puzzle tournaments typically are carried out. I mean, how are they put together? How does the competition unfold?
Well, there's really only one major crossword event these days. That's the annual tournament that's held in Stamford, Connecticut every March, run by my friend Will Shortz, who's the puzzle editor of the New York Times. It is a series of puzzles done against the clock in a classroom-like setting. Will says, on your mark, get set, go. You do the puzzle as quickly as you can. You raise your hand when you're done. The paper is taken from you, and they're graded out of sight, and the scores are added up, and the top finishers get to compete on big, giant, blown-up puzzles in front of the audience, which is really nerve-wracking.
Tell us something about the history of crossword puzzles. Do we know when the first crossword puzzles were put together, and by whom and for what?
Yes, we do. It's not an ancient mystery or anything like that. Crosswords are a relatively new invention. The first crossword appeared in 1913 in the old New York World newspaper. The first crossword was put together by a gentleman named Arthur Wynn, who was the Sunday supplement editor, who was looking for something cute to give away to his readers as a Christmas present. It was just before Christmas in 1913 that the first crossword was published. It was called a word cross, and became a crossword a few weeks later.
How big was that first crossword puzzle?
Oh, it's a tiny little puzzle. In fact, it was filled with words that you and I would probably not recognize. It had the basic resemblance of a crossword. It was sort of pyramid-shaped. It was not square the way we know them to be today.
What is your opinion of a good crossword puzzle versus one that's just fair to partly cloudy? I mean, like, for instance, this book, which is filled with 99 of your favorite crossword puzzles, what sets them apart from other crossword puzzles?
Well, that's a very good question. To me, a good crossword has nothing to do with how easy or how hard it is. I'm looking for puzzles in the book that has my 199 favorite in Opus 100. Puzzles that made me smile, made me laugh, had something really interesting or really fun about them. Maybe just a little bit unusual. I'll give you one little example from one of the puzzles in this book. One of them has the title, Who's Laughing Now? And the main idea of that puzzle is famous laughs from characters in American pop culture. For example, we have the ho-ho-ho of the Jolly Green Giant, and we have the ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha of Woody Woodpecker. And I don't know very many people who wouldn't laugh when they saw that sort of thing in a crossword. Not
right.
The sort of thing you'd expect to be there, and actually it's one of my all-time favorites.
I wonder your opinion of crossword puzzles in which some of the answers will be something like, you know, I don't know the person who delivers your mail abbreviation, and then the answer would be MM for mailman or something like that. When I read a clue like that, I always feel like that's a little bit of a sort of an easy way out for the person who's constructed the crossword. Am I being unduly grumpy here? I mean, do you think a clue like that is perfectly legitimate, or do you prefer them to really utilize real words as much as possible?
Well, you've hit on one of the stylistic necessities of the best crosswords. Abbreviations in puzzles are things that are to be avoided wherever possible. It's not as pleasing to the consumer, the solver of crosswords, to have to think about what certain letters stand for rather than actual words. In practice, abbreviations appear in crosswords these days much less than they used to. The skills of puzzle makers are much greater now, much higher, they're much more able to use only interesting words and phrases in puzzles as opposed to abbreviations or foreign words or obscure words that no one has ever heard of. One of the reasons the skills have increased is the use of a computer. Unlike some computer programs that do all the work in certain situations, the people that use computers to create crosswords are using it in the way that a carpenter would use a screwdriver. The computer will give you a list of certain words that fit certain diagrams, and a good constructor or puzzle maker will select the one that's most interesting, the one that he or she can write the most interesting clue for. And of course, abbreviations are much less interesting than real words. Absolutely, I agree with you 100%.
It's interesting, some of the puzzles in the book that appear to be constructed with a real visual effect in mind. I mean, where for instance, the blacked out squares that don't have any letters in them, that it will really form some sort of symmetrical pattern pleasing to the eye. And then other puzzles, at least at a glance, appear to be a little more random in that respect. Although I think the vast majority of the puzzles in your book, if we really look closely, we start to see that, yes, there is some rhyme or reason to the visual layout of the puzzle. Is this something which has changed also?
To a certain extent, crossword diagrams these days are almost all symmetric, meaning if you turned the diagram upside down, the pattern of black and white squares would be exactly the same. Part of the aesthetics of creating a crossword is to have a pleasing pattern of black and white squares against each other. Some constructors will work especially hard to arrange those black squares in a pleasing fashion. Some actually create puzzles where the black squares are involved in the puzzle. One of the puzzles that I created a while ago had the letter T as the theme, a very intricate theme, where not only did every clue of the puzzle start with the letter T, but the pattern in the diagram, the black squares in the diagram, formed numerous letter T's.
Wow.
And so there's an extra bonus for somebody looking for a puzzle with a little more thought and a little more creativity put into it.
Well, and there's at least one puzzle in your book, I'm trying to find it now, which isn't even in the shape of a square or rectangle.
Oh,
but
I know the one that you mean. It's the shape of a hexagon.
Hexagon, that's
Puzzle
right.
Puzzle 92 by...
Here it is, yeah. Fascinating variation on what we typically see for a crossword puzzle.
The creativity that some people bring into a crossword is amazing. This puzzle was created by the team of Emily Cox and Henry Rathbone, known for their puzzles in Atlantic Monthly and the Boston Globe. The shape of the diagram is a hexagon. The individual squares are hexagons and not squares. But the puzzle is solved conventionally. There is nothing tricky about it other than instead of entering the answers across and down, you enter them either in the northeast, southeast, or south direction. It sounds much more difficult than it is. It's a really straightforward crossword. It's the visual presentation that's unique and right. remarkably unique.
As you construct crossword puzzles, what are you typically trying to think about in terms of what clues and what answers to have? I mean, do you imagine a certain kind of person doing the crossword puzzle? Or, I mean, what goes through your mind as you sort of grapple with those kind of nuts and bolts matters?
Well, I can give you a good example of that. Just a couple of days ago, I ran a crossword that I created to celebrate the start of summer. And when I started thinking about, gee, what kind of puzzle can I do for the start of summer, I thought of the title, Summer is Here. And always looking to skew things a little, not give you exactly what you might be thinking of first, I thought of the word summer, not as the season, but as something that sums. And I made a puzzle called Summer is Here, whose main answers were the keys on a calculator, including a square root and memory add. And so this may seem weird or slightly wacky. Maybe it is slightly wacky, but it's rewarding the puzzle doer who doesn't take words at face value.
Hmm.
And so to continue to answer your question, I try to put a lot of thought into making the main idea of a puzzle something a little unusual, not difficult, but slightly skewed, slightly wacky. I take very seriously the concept that all the answers of a crossword should be words you've heard of. Try to have a balanced mixture of interesting words and facts. There are people that don't know some facts or people that know some words, and you've got to bear in mind, the puzzle editor and puzzle creator really needs to have a sense for what people are likely to know or likely not to know and be guided accordingly in the words that they select. And in the clues that get written for crossword after the diagram is created, you want to use interesting language, the same as any good prose writer. You want to use wordplay in a way that will challenge the thinking of the puzzle doer and make somebody smile. You try to use factual information that, if not known, at least will provide some interesting information that you might not have known before. All of that combined without making it too difficult so that no one can do, and not so easy that you can fill it in as quickly as you can write.
Hmm. In our closing minute or so, I want you to boast to our listening audience about your place in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Well, it's not a Guinness World Record exactly, but it was done under Guinness conditions.
Right.
I do hold the world's record for the fastest completion of a New York Times crossword, 2 minutes and 14 seconds. That was set in a New York City New York City television station on a Sunday. Will Schwartz puzzle letter of the New York Times provided a crossword that was going to appear in the New York Times the next day, so there was no possible way I could have seen the puzzle ahead of time. The puzzle was handed to me on camera, and just as they said, on your mark, get set, go, I turned it over, the clock was ticking, and when I said done, the time on the clock read 2 minutes and 14 seconds. It was quite a rush for me, of course, and it's a record that has not yet been approached and would have to be done under similarly strict conditions so that one would know it was legit.
Well, and for those of us that would struggle just to complete that puzzle at all, it's just mind-boggling to think of it being completed so quickly. Are young people taking to the crossword puzzle?
Yes, more and more, for many reasons. They see it in their newspaper, they see their mother, their aunt, their grandmother do it. And these days, with parents looking for more and more things that they can do together with their children in a society where it sort of mitigates against parents and children doing things together, crosswords turn out to be a really good way for parents and children to spend time together. Children do pick it up on their own as well. I get emails all the time and letters from puzzle doers who are in their teens and want to know how to do puzzles better, and they're just starting out and how to go about it. For many of those people, I recommend taking a look at my puzzle website, which is filled with detailed clues on how to solve puzzles better. There's a free crossword on there every day that I edit, and I hope your listeners will check that out, and that can be found at www.stanxwords.com. That's STANXWORDS.com.
www.stanxwords.com. Stanley Newman is the editor of Newsday's nationally syndicated crossword, the author of a number of different collections of crosswords. This most recent book, called Stanley Newman's Opus 100 Crosswords, published by Random House Puzzles and Games. Stanley Newman, I really enjoyed this and very much enjoyed reading your book. Best wishes to you, and thank you
Greg.
For joining me.
Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye.